Until 11, Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And we say good morning to Peter and Bucket because it is time to talk Monday Sport. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Mitch, and how are you this morning?
I'm very well. Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, I did. I have a good weekend. Just gelled up with sport all the way through the whole weekend, from Friday night right through to Sunday night.
Fantastic. Now, what were you watching?
Oh, look, I watched a bit of cricket from New Zealand, which I was very impressed with. I watched a bit of the bike race, the Sun Tour, from down the other side of Melbourne. And I watched a bit of the soccer on the other night. Bit disappointed in the soccer. Bit disappointed, when they let off flares and everything like that. I thought they were going to behave themselves. But no, we've got to go back to our old culture and throw a few flares around.
Soccer crowds behaving themselves,
Since when are they behaving themselves?
Exactly, that's the point.
Yeah. Well, it's big news. I mean, I don't know how they're going to stamp this out. I mean, if they're actual supporters that are doing that, well, then the club's got to come down hard and just suspend their membership. But it's pretty hard. They're talking of, say, maybe the offending supporters from whichever club, that the club loses the points for a game. So there'll be some big decisions that might have to be made there.
That was actually a debate that has been held a few years ago about whether we should punish the actual sporting teams for the fans' violent behaviour. And I'm not sure, because if you wanted to do that, you go to a Geelong Collingwood game, put on a Collingwood scarf, and then fire off a couple of flares and become an unruly patron, and then give a couple of king hits out on the way, and then Collingwood would be excluded from the final series. And
you've got it all worked out, haven't you?
I'm sure the patrons do, because they spend a lot more time thinking about this than I do.
Yes, it's certainly right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But in terms of the flares, I mean, I think you do have to discipline the individual offenders, because the other question is, well, how do you get them into the ground? And it's quite easy these days to get contraband into the ground. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, even though they do have bag searches. But you just can't comprehensively search 100,000 people as they go in. So much better to target the actual offenders rather than making everyone go through increased checks.
I see the police were down there. They're lined up every second row of seats and that type of thing. Well, basically, you go to a lot of other Australian sport and we don't see security like that. And that's where soccer has fallen so far behind. And the other thing about soccer is it doesn't encourage people like me to go to the soccer.
I don't want flares because
at my age and that, I'd probably have a heart attack if a flare went off,
But also, it can go horribly wrong. They're dangerous for a reason,
And
I think that's important. I mean, in the United States, if you want to go to a baseball game, from what I understand, you have to go through metal detectors and X-ray machines.
Huge, isn't it?
No, look,
I really don't know how they're going to overcome this. And as you say, quite often it's just a group of blokes that may not be following any particular club and just go to a match and want to cause a bit of trouble and think it's fun.
So, fans behaving badly, it's always been happening, but what can we do to stop it? And I think you've got to go to the actual perpetrators rather than trying to penalise everyone.
Yeah. I think last year there was a move made to sort of clamp down on fans and everything like that, and the first thing the fan says, that's unfair, we can't go through the system, give us a chance. Now, I think all their chances are gone out the window now.
Yeah, that's probably fair enough. You've got to clean it up. Now, Australia versus New Zealand in the cricket. What are you expecting there?
Well, I expect a very good game of cricket today in the one day. Like they're both one each. So the competition is going to be very, very interesting today. I think the Australian side is not quite as strong as what I thought they may have been. I think some of the replacement players who have come in haven't sort of acted up. And with the New Zealand side, a little bit disappointed with their fielding the other day. I thought they a far better side than that. And I think Australia let them off the hook a little bit, it's just interesting with the Australian cricketers at the moment. Like if Warner's not one of the best cricketers I've ever seen, I haven't seen anybody. He's just unbelievable. All three formats of the game, Peter. He's outstanding, isn't he?
He is. I would think that we should win one. And Warner, I noticed there too, in the Indian summer, he picked up 1.16 mil, wasn't he?
Pretty handy, isn't it? Pretty handy. Now, there was a real feature after the game at Wellington there on when it finished on Saturday. And the workers come in and they remove the drop-in pitch from that ground, and within 24 hours later they're playing an A-League soccer game on there. It's just amazing how it's gone now. So come on, Geelong.
Yeah.
Football one day, cricket the next day. We can have the whole lot, can't we? Hey?
Well, we should be trying to, that's for sure.
Yeah,
yep, absolutely. Yeah. Now, there's been a bit of a discussion on the Geelong Football Club social media about which premiership in recent memory was Geelong's best premiership. Was it 07? Was it 09? Was it 11? I think it was 07 because there's just something about breaking a drought of that long and finally winning a premiership. What do you think?
I'd go along with 07, yeah. Like, all three premierships were really, really classy, wasn't it? And when you look at it, basically, there's a huge majority of players in the Geelong club at the time played in those three games. So if you go on just pure talent alone, there was certainly some great talent in those three sides, wasn't there?
There was. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, I would think 07 would... And from someone outside looking in, just to see the the celebrations around Geelong that night and everything, everyone got wrapped up in it all. But it was a good effort because early in 06, I mean, they were struggling again, Geelong, weren't they?
Oh yes,
and there was a lot of pressure on Bomber Thompson. And
even in early 07, the first couple of games that year didn't go very well.
It was pretty interesting back there. We've often spoken about how Chapman sort of spoke to the players in general down at the Geelong Football Club, and the moment he spoke to them after that, everything seemed to turn around. Like the way I understand Chapman, I can't understand why he's not involved with a league club at this stage, like coaching or something like that.
Isn't there some development there I saw? Something about he could be offered an off-field role at one organisation. I'm not sure who it was.
Oh, yes, that certainly could be the case. They've got to be looking at all these guys. They seem to pick guys who perhaps got a little bit of experience from other clubs and things like that. Chappie's right on the doorstep,
Is he coaching somewhere this year?
He's down in the Werribee districts. Down there. Yeah, like whether he'll play or not, that's just another thing. But gee whiz, like he was a wonderful on-field leader, wasn't he? That's what I like about Chappie.
But in terms of a premiership, we love an underdog story and we love someone breaking a long drought. I mean, if St Kilda or the Western Bulldogs won a premiership this year or next year, that would be a fantastic story to tell as well. And I think
what about Fremantle?
We don't like Fremantle.
Oh, you don't like Fremantle, all right.
But also they haven't had a drought as long as St Kilda and the Bulldogs.
That's right. Yeah. And I think Geelong too that year, they made a couple of hard decisions. They stood Stevie Johnson down for a while, and then we saw what he did in that premiership. He just played an absolute blind. They made hard decisions. They made the right decisions, and sticking by Bomber. I think probably Brian Cook was the man there that that came up with the idea, said, "Yep, this is it." And we know too, the Bomber didn't like being when they did that
Revere.
He was not happy. But at the end of the day, it worked out well. But I think that 07 is just something special. But I don't think anyone would begrudge St Kilda or. Or Western Bulldogs, particularly Western Bulldogs.
Bulldogs. I think we feel a lot of the pain of our northern neighbours, neighbours, and what they go through. I think St Kilda maybe has a bit more of a reputation than some of the off-field issues.
That's just thinking the same.
Whereas Western Bulldogs, I think there's a bit more of a perception of clean cut. They're good fans. The fans don't heckle and abuse you as much as some of the other clubs.
That's
I've noticed.
Part of football, though, isn't it?
Amongst themselves.
It is, but it doesn't make you like the team anymore. That's for sure.
All right. Now, Mitch, membership tickets.
Yes.
A big variation in prices, for membership tickets. It's pretty interesting, Peter. Like they range from $215 down to $170. Now Geelong's priced at $210. Now it doesn't give a breakdown. They've got 8 games here at Geelong, and they've got 3 home games in Melbourne. There's other categories, I dare say, you can get to or anything like that, but they haven't mentioned anything like that.
Sorry, what does the $210 get you?
The $210 gets you 8 games here at Geelong and 3 in Melbourne.
Right, so all the home games.
The home games. That's general admission, really. And then you've got to pay for seats down here at Geelong, so it makes it a little bit more expensive.
And also in Melbourne, if it's allocated seating, you've got to pay to actually reserve a seat at Etihad in the MCG.
But there's one thing down here at Geelong, we do have free parking, so we'll go a little bit easier on them. But Essendon's the really interesting one, Peter, is the fact that $170. That might be that might tell us why the Essendon membership has climbed up so high early in the season.
Membership, I try to get my head around and numbers of members, but I still believe the old days where you just bought your membership for the whole season, but you can buy your 3 games, 5 games, 2 interstates, whatever. I really can't. I just don't think the actual figures of number of members and clubs really is a true indication yeah. of the real.
That's a fair hard. Point because when I first joined Geelong, this was back in 2004. I think they were struggling to get to 30,000 members.
Oh,
from
that's
memory.
Right. It's only been recent times, isn't it?
Now they're well over 44, yeah, and yeah. I think you're right in saying that those 3-game and 5-game memberships are probably a big driver in that.
Yeah.
The $210, that's actually not too bad, is it, for 11 games? Like, what does that work out to be? About $20 a game?
Yeah. When you look at general prices to get into a game, is it worth $22,
yeah.
$13 concession. Now,
yeah, well,
another
yeah.
little beef I've got, you know, like when you come to the NAB Cup, it's going to cost you $20 to get in for an adult. $15 concession, that's a couple of dollars dearer than what the normal home and away. And the other concern is that they're going to charge juniors under 15s $5 to get in compared with $3 at a normal home and away game. That's the AFL,
if,
isn't it?
Do you know if you can get into the NAB games if you have a valid club membership?
You can get in, yes.
For free?
For free.
Okay, that's good.
Just show your NAB ticket and away you go. But I don't know what if you reserve a seat down here to go into the NAB game, I don't know how much that reserve seat would cost.
I don't think it works because I have a reserve. Oh, no, you mean like for if you decide
for the
to
NAB Cup?
Yeah. I don't know if you'd bother because are the crowds really that big? Maybe if Geelong Collingwood come and play, it might actually draw.
Come
a bit
on, they couldn't draw too many last year. Now, come on, Mitch.
Well, they probably would. Like usually it would be free seating. I don't think there'd be too much of an issue.
Well, it was pretty interesting last year. I went into the where I reserved seats, and there was quite a large number of people in there. It was pretty interesting because people, you know, they go to the game, they arrive at the game, they know they've got that comfort of under the roof or something like that. Whereas if you take that general admission, you might be out in the pouring rain.
You might be in the pouring rain. You might have an obscured or obstructed view. You might be... I mean, there's all sorts of issues.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the membership, I think it's obviously good that there is a bit of variation in the pricing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because if you're a Collingwood or whatever, you can afford to charge a lot more for a membership than, say, a North Melbourne or a Western Bulldogs.
But, Mitch, you would think there'd be a category down here where you could just go and buy 8 home games here at Geelong, wouldn't you? Because a lot of people don't travel to Melbourne and watch, really. I think there has been a drop-off... particularly when the team's not winning.
I reckon David might come in on this very
shortly.
He is.
Right. Here he is.
He's coming.
Marching into the studio.
There is home games only membership.
Yeah, it was.
Right.
It's not published in the...
But is that the 3 ones in Melbourne as
no.
well?
No,
just
8.
Yep.
Just it's the 3 home matches in...
We can't hear you.
It is the three home matches. It's in Melbourne, but it doesn't allow for any away matches. So you can just get a home membership only.
Yeah, what Ron was saying, is it possible just to buy a membership for the 8 games here in Geelong?
No, I thought you could, at least in previous years you could. So it's been scrapped, has it?
No, it was just all home. It was just home matches, which included the ones in Melbourne.
Right.
Okay.
You don't have to go, but that's what a home membership means. You get your home membership.
I'm sure you used to be able to get like just an 8 for the Geelong, like just the Geelong games. Anyway, there you go. But you know, getting the 3 games in Melbourne, that's good for the people that live in the eastern suburbs, because there's actually a bit of a supporter base for Geelong in the southeastern suburbs of Melbourne.
There was a big argument, quite a few years ago about they had to look after the Melbourne-based supporters. You know, that's all very, very well. But at the same time, like Melbourne-based supporters may be able to buy a three-game package to go into home games, like in Melbourne. I don't know. There's none of those sort of details in what was published the other day.
Yep. But no, I think, as I said, good to have a bit of variation in terms of the pricing so that people can get the membership that suits them. But I think we'd probably all say that it's for the benefit of everyone if more people join football clubs and support the team of their choice and keep this sport vibrant and alive and ticking over.
Oh, yes, I think you're spot on there. Basically, it is a national competition. And in Geelong, we do need a team in a national competition. Doesn't matter what the sport is, get teams into the national competition.
Now, the Super Bowl number 50 has started between the Panthers and the Broncos. Are you aware of that? Are you excited about that? Any thoughts there?
Oh, I'm not very excited about it, because I think the game itself, and what I've seen, I tried to study it a little bit last year, I think the game itself seems to go far too long. They seem to take off all these players and rotations and everything like that. I just had problems understanding it all.
It's about 4 hours, isn't it?
Yeah, 4 hours.
Well, that's a marathon. And people say AFL games are a long time because you get 4 30-minute quarters, whereas the Super Bowl, that is unbelievable. But they have all their things that they do. They have their parties out the front, don't they?
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah, but they have that at the MCG too, don't they?
I think a ticket's something... I heard someone say a decent ticket is something up to about $20,000 or something.
Yeah.
But it is. It's huge over there. And But I think the who are the favourites in this? The Panthers, aren't they?
I don't know who's the favourites.
We'd have to look at the betting markets. But Carolina apparently called tails. They won the toss. This was 4 minutes ago, and now they're kicking off. I don't know what any of that means, apart from probably tossing the coin, but I'm sure that that means something to people out there that do actually follow the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm a few years ago now, of course, we had our own Geelong Benny Graham playing in one of the Super Bowls, didn't
That's
we?
That's right.
And that brought a... and I must admit, that day, there was a group of us, and I'd never watched the game before, but we all got together at a hotel and sat there for as you say, about 4 hours and watched it, but purely because of the fact that Benny was in the game.
And in current betting markets, you've got the Carolina Panthers at $1.50 and the Denver Broncos at $2.92. So yeah, Carolina Panthers are the clear favourites there.
I think they've got some brilliant half back or something. I think so. He's the one, unless he breaks a leg or something. It'd be very hard to see them not winning. But they are very apparently they're I can't think of the word to describe the Panthers, but they're fairly full of confidence about themselves and
well, just be careful. Confidence can it's good in a small amount, but if you let it get to your head, you're gone.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Peter, I understand only about 70,000 people attend this game. Is that right?
Whatever the seating capacity is, it would be full. It's booked out.
It's booked out. But 70,000 against what we get in Melbourne.
I think in Melbourne we definitely get a lot more people at the MCG.
Do we? What?
And we like to rub that in as well.
But as I said, I'm led to believe that some of the best seats are up to $20,000.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I think for our grand final, if you get one of the corporate boxes or corporate suites, it would get up to that amount.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
And the advertising during the game over there in the States, apparently it is unbelievable how much you pay per second for an ad. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is what I was going to say. In terms of the Super Bowl, I don't really understand the game. I don't understand how it works, and I'm happy to concede that. But what we are watching for is usually the halftime entertainment, but then also the different ad campaigns, because a lot of companies use the Super Bowl as a way to launch their advertising campaigns or their new direction, because, as you've said, everyone is watching and it's a captive audience.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Now, very good. Well, we'll go to a break now on Mitchell's Front Page, and we'll come back and chat a bit more sport after this.
This is Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
Now, just during the break, we were talking about some of the issues in racing, and there could be a proposal to ban racehorses for life if they're found to be on certain drugs. I think looking at that from the outset, it does look like a sensible proposal, just when you look at the amount of money that gets circulated around, maybe not as much in Australian racing, but in British thoroughbred racing, the amount of money spent on that in terms of betting is unbelievable.
Why ban the horse? The horse has had no say in it. Ban the trainer, the staff and all that. They're the ones that are doing it. If the horse can get rid of the drugs out of its system, then it can race competitively, naturally, then why should they? You know, why should the horse be punished? Why should the owners be punished if they knew nothing about it? It is the trainer and their staff that should be severely punished, and that is loss of their license, banned for life, and massive fines.
Yeah, well,
that would, I think, in my view, clean it right up.
I think now the cobalt thing's come out, and we've already seen a couple of trainers suspended. Some are still trained on a stay of proceedings. But we've got Peter Moody about to, of course, who's the trainer of Black Caviar. He's about to cop his 3 or 5 year ban, I would imagine. But the one that's really got everyone worried now is this this other drug, which is an anti-inflammatory drug. And unfortunately, it apparently lays dormant in the horses. And there's quite a number of horses at the moment where trainers are just, they get them swabbed and the swab shows it negative, and then couple of days beforehand they do another swab and it comes up positive, and this can lay dormant apparently in the horses for months, which they were not aware of.
Well, I was about to chime in, but I wouldn't want to talk over the top of David, but I just chime in on that point. He says, well, you just wait until all the drugs are out of the system. How long does it take for all the drugs? It's not sure. You're not sure about how long it takes. But also there's doubt cast over that horse forever, because they say, well, 2 years ago that horse was caught up with X. Yeah. You know, what about now when it's it was $15 to win, but somehow it's won? You know, what's going on there? So there's always going to be that doubt over it, and you can't have that when there's betting and money changing hands.
No.
By the same token, these drugs are being picked up by scientific tests, and the scientific tests can then say there's no you know, comprehensive scientific tests can determine whether there is or is not any of these drugs in the system. Now, if the scientists say, well, this is a short-term acting drug, which most of these are, not long-term,
no.
The short-term, the effect will be gone after X number of weeks, months, or whatever, then I think they should be allowed, but have, you know, continual scrutiny on their performance and their blood testing.
And that
is, to me, if the owners know nothing about it, the horses certainly had no option.
Mm.
You know, and yet it's like these greyhounds at these no, I better not say the AH word about the owner or the breeders had put greyhounds down because they're not good enough, breeding them irresponsibly.
Mm.
These animals are being victimised when they've had no choice in the matter.
Yeah,
it's the human involvement in these, and the humans should be severely punished.
Oh, I mean, yeah, right, I mean, sure. You can punish the humans as well, but I mean, you know, I think an interesting proposal with the idea about the horse. But in terms of these scientists and the drug testing people saying categorically that we think the drug is out of the system, well, you'd think that, but there's been time and time again shown where the drug cheats have been ahead of where the science is at.
Oh, for sure.
And that's where the money is. So you can't categorically trust drug tests when they're negative.
No, look, you'll hear pundits years ago and say, remember when so-and-so... You know, trained a large number of winners in a certain time, and then all of a sudden, things go quiet, and you just think, yeah, they're that one step ahead.
But you're big on this, Peter, and you're into racing a lot more than me. Do you think that's a viable option to ban the horse, or you don't think it would have any effect?
I don't think that's fair.
Fair enough.
I'd agree with David there. The horse had no say in it. Just get the people who've done the wrong thing, put them out, give them a decent old suspension, as we say. Look, these trainers that have been suspended now, they won't come back into the game, I have no doubt. If Peter Moody cops his 5 years, he won't come back. It's just...
You can't trust the people, and you don't want that name to tarnish your horse, and that's a
the unfortunate one is this anti-inflammatory one that, as I said, Darren Weir's got a very good horse in Sign-Off, and he just came out at the weekend. It just continues to come back testing positive, hasn't been treated for over... I think it's about 6 weeks since it was treated for the drug. Now, that drug's supposed to be out the system within 14 days, and that's the rule of racing says that drug's not to be used within 14 days of racing. Now he's 6 weeks down the track, and as he said at the weekend, so what do? I chuck the horse in the paddock and not know when he can come back, or I play Russian roulette.
Yeah.
Go to the races with the
horse. I think we're right to be sceptical. First of all, if someone says, well, drug's going to be out in 14 days, I would not listen to that, I'm sorry to say. But also, again, the drug cheats are ahead of the science.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on this, Bucket?
Yes, I certainly go along with what Peter said. I think that's a real endorsement of how to keep the game nice and clean, isn't it? And that's what we do want. Now, the other thing I'll ask you about racing, shorter intervals between races, Peter. It seemed to be well received in Melbourne by the people who go, not well received on the television, I understand.
No, apparently there's a few things. And look, 30 minutes, 35 minutes or 40, if you're at the races, I still think 35. I can't quite work out the 30.
Yeah, but 30, what are you doing 35 minutes, though, and you're going to have a dollar on a horse?
Yeah, well, that's... Yeah,
for 35 minutes, that's when you have main course.
Yeah.
Oh. And then you watch a race, and then you have dessert, and that gives you a good amount of time.
If you want to go down to the mounting yard and metropolitan tracks, and you go down to the mounting yard, have a look at all the horses, and then by the time you get back up to your stand or your seat or whatever... look, the 5 minutes, I don't think it's neither here nor there. The thing that is a concern is that maybe the jockeys, they've been rushed around a bit for the day. By the time they come back, they weigh in after the race. They have to speak to the owners, and they've got to go race back into the jockey's room, get changed again, colours, get all their lead bags, everything organised, weigh out.
There's more in it than what I thought then.
Well, I don't know a lot about racing, but I know that races often start a bit later than scheduled because, you're dealing with wild animals, and sometimes a horse won't go into the barrier when you think it's going to. So I think you maybe need a bit of a gap there for contingencies. Would that be a fair comment?
Yeah. Look, and as we say now with Sky Racing and all that, like they really have to be dead set on time because on a Saturday you've got about five, six race meetings going around in the afternoon.
Yeah, because they'll go to Caulfield, then they'll go somewhere else straight after.
So it is it's something that they don't like to see, and Sky just often just go bang and two races will jump at the same time. Well, that can't be helped. But I think it's the whole thing comes back to just the welfare of the jockeys. That's the one. And if they're finding that they're rushing to get back in for the next ride and et cetera, well, maybe stretch it out to 35 minutes. But the TV thing was a bit bit all over the place apparently at the weekend. But it sitting back, you think 5 minutes. What the hell is 5 minutes?
Yep.
But there is a lot of things that come into the equation. So.
Well, there you go. Jake Reed, Bucket, you were keen to talk about him because he's made the Victorian 12-man squad.
Yes, he's certainly in there. He made his debut in 2014. I think he played about two or three games back in that area time. And basically, he's got a second chance now. He's got to make the most of it because basically with the Victorian squad has been hit by players moving up to the next level, like national level and that. So he's got a wonderful chance now. And I understand he's now based in Melbourne, since he became a member of the Bushrangers squad. So that may be the reason why we don't see him down here playing too much. I don't know. I'll have to check that one out if he's playing for a district team in Melbourne.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and the latest on our man Finch.
Finch is injured. Yeah, it's going to be interesting with Finchy. Like the future of Finchy, like at national level, it's going to be very, very hard because he can't afford to give anybody else a start because there's that many candidates out there, and guys who are coming into the side are performing. Like another one is Joe Burns too. He set Australia on fire. Yes. The way he batted in the Test. He's not spoken of now, is he?
No, you don't hear him.
Well, it's on the back cover of the paper today that Finch could be stripped of his 2020 captaincy.
Well, that'd be a huge loss, but it's pretty interesting that they're talking about putting Smith up there. But I don't know. Stevie, he seems to just fail in some of these games. Like he failed again the other day. A little bit disappointing. Perhaps he doesn't handle the shorter format really well.
Good point there.
Yeah.
Yep. And what about the cycling over the weekend?
The cycling once again, the Sun Tour in Melbourne. Yeah, we've had some great events in Australia over the summertime period. And out comes this bloke from England, and he just wipes the board. Climbing the hill. Down there the other day, a wonderful performer. And we're going to see more and more and more of these blokes come from overseas who are top class riders, not second classes, but they've got to bring those top class riders out here because they're the ones we want to see, and they're the guys who are going to improve cycling in Australia.
For sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Did you go down and watch the what we have at the weekend?
The Ironman down here. I didn't go down and watch it because I'm fully booked on the television at times. The national what goes on, but I understand there was some very, very good performances down there. And the Ironman sport now, it's a wonderful sport. You've got to have disciplines over three different events. Like swimming. And then you go for a little bike ride, and then you've got to come for a bit of a run.
So it's sort of like triathlon.
I think different areas. I think depending on what's available for them. How they frame it out.
In a triathlon, you always start with swimming first, and I think do you do the run and then finish with the? No, you finish with the run, don't you?
Finish with the run.
So it sounds very similar to Ironman triathlon.
Pretty good. Pretty good athletes. These guys, they just go for 4 or 5 hours, and just wonderful athletes, aren't they?
Well, how would you go about training across multiple disciplines?
You'd have to be so self-disciplined, wouldn't you, to do all the work they've got to do when you know that the event's going to go between 4 and 5 hours. That's a long time. Like it's not a 10-second dash up the park or anything like that, is it?
No. I know a younger bloke who's. He's got right into the triathlons and everything, and his weakest area was the swimming, of course. And the rest he was handling quite well, but he's just worked that hard on his swimming.
Because swimming, you've got to get the technique right and the stroke right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now he's slowly he's starting to run reasonable or very good times now over the three areas. So, but as you said, the rest of it he had under control. The cycling and the running was not an issue, but the swimming that's the area that he's working on.
That would be the case of all triathletes, I suppose. They do have one area that they have to work on, but I'd say swimming is probably the hardest to master.
Many years ago to talk about marathon running and things like. Young from up at Lavers Hill, and what he done when he ran from Sydney to Melbourne, little old fella down there shuffled along in his rubber Cliffy. Boots and things like that.
It was a
wonderful performance. Then we don't get those sort of performances now. We get these highly trained athletes out there, don't we?
That was great. That little mini film or whatever they did on the Cliff Young story. That was a classic.
That was magnificent.
But
I can remember driving down through the forest there at Lavers Hill, around that beach forest area, and that Cliff would be running along the road, and he'd always wait till every car went by. You know, he was a wonderful character.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Patrick's warming up next door. He's got Unraveled for you from 11 o'clock. It's a fantastic program. He plays some very relaxing and great music, and also covers off the big issues in a little bit more time and space than perhaps what we always do on Front Page. So it's always a great show on The Pulse, but guys, I'll let you have the last word.
Well, the only word I can say, soccer fans, lift your game.
Yes,
that's a fair point.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing too, Wednesday we're all waiting for this AFL Barwon to come out with their blueprint for the three leagues, which and I know it's Dennis's show on Friday, but we will be speaking to the president of chairman of GDFL, and Neville Whitley will Friday to give us a rundown and how they view the whole decisions that will be made on Wednesday.
Hopefully everyone that listens to Front Page on a Monday and Tuesday always listens to Dennis on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday from 9 to 11. But if you don't, make sure you especially listen to Dennis's show on Friday, because I think that's going to be interesting given some of the issues you guys have talked about in the past with the different leagues and what we've seen with some
and
of the results.
Point system. The point system. Yes.
But if there's any carrying over analysis, we will talk about that on Monday. Thanks, guys.
Sure.
Good to see you. Peter and Bucket there with Monday Sport. That's just about it for Front Page this morning. It's been great to have your company as always, and Patrick warming up next door for Unraveled. It's going to be an action-packed Unraveled this morning. I can just see from how Patrick is getting all set up for it. I'll be back at 3 o'clock this afternoon for an hour of music, and then of course Front Page returns on The Pulse tomorrow morning from 9. We'll have Rebecca Casson, the CEO of the Committee for Geelong, with us in the studio. It's always an interesting segment, so tune in for that tomorrow from 9.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.